I'm Pat Ault. I'm from Towson University, which is a suburb of Baltimore. And this may not be as upbeat as some of the other ones. I apologize. As I got further into it, I discovered more that I had not been as fully aware of. Ugh. So anyway, we're talking about the hospice model for care, which has been around for a while. Let's see here. How do I go to the next? Just click it. Yeah. I don't have any financial relationships to disclose. So we're talking about issues in end-of-life care. Improving end-of-life care has been a public health goal for a long time, but the idea about hospice has not always been clear. Since Medicare started covering hospice in 1983, and we've been facing some shifting requirements under the ACA, regulation has become more concerning and more of a, not very, even less clear in some ways. Can you hear? I saw you doing the ear thing. Okay. I'll try. So APHA, our policy committee within the Aging and Public Health section, has been working on policies about various different aspects of this. We put together a policy on hospice. We're working on more in terms of dementia and other forms of care. We're trying to improve the public's awareness about these different kinds of care. People still get very confused and think hospice is somehow aid in dying or assisted suicide. Probably most of you, how many of you have had relatives or friends that were in hospice at some point? Yeah, me too. And my sister at that time, well, then you just kill me too. So, it does take some talking and thinking about what this really means. So the policy concerns are, as they're increasingly consolidated and commercialized, they're likely to be seen, unfortunately, I think, that's just my opinion, as a way to sort of subsidize long-term care rather than necessarily providing appropriate time-limited care for the terminally ill. There's also been a substantial increase in the average length of stay, particularly in for-profit hospices. And another key concern is the level of care provided to those folks in different kinds of setting and who's watching, who's regulating it. I cut and pasted these out of an article in the Washington Post from December of 2014. They're not terribly legible, I'm sorry, but things got hectic at the end right before we came. So what these are is some measures that they used from Medicaid information, from CMS information, about for-profit and non-profit hospices doing different kinds of things. This data is actually from 2014. So care spending per day, the green ones are for-profit and the yellowish ones are non-profit. Surprise, surprise, the for-profits tend to spend less per patient per day. In terms of crisis care, the non-profits tend to provide a higher level of that. Dropouts. Dropouts means folks who leave the hospice care, sometimes because they've outlived the 6 months and they drop out for a while and then they come back again. That tends to be higher in much higher in for-profits, which can, some folks think, be an indication of poor service. This last one is the one that's in some ways most upsetting. Nonprofit hospices are more likely to visit a patient at home in the last 2 days of life. That's, you're supposed to be visiting the person. That's part of what hospice does. And the for-profits are considerably less likely to do that. Okay, so there's been some efforts to monitor hospice over the last few years. Congress created the MedPAC watchdog group to report on Medicare spending, and it has reported that a growing percentage of Medicare's hospice spending is going to people who stay longer than 6 months, particularly in for-profit hospices. So if you stay longer than 6 months, you have to drop out and then come back for another supposed 6 months. CMS relies on state survey agencies or accrediting organizations to oversee hospices. There's a tremendous variation in how often they recertify them. In some states, as long as 22 years since the last time they did the survey. That's the way out on the extreme, but still, it's disturbing. To me. So ethical concerns. How can we be sure that the patient autonomy and informed consent are fully supported? You know, if you're in my facility and I want to get some funding from Medicare to cover you, how well am I really going to describe that I'm putting you into hospice so I can get that funding? Are there uniform standards for the regulation of those programs? How do the corporate structures of the hospice providers shape their provision of services? I don't have the answers to all of these. I'm just raising some good questions, unfortunately. Are hospice patients receiving adequate care from appropriately trained direct care providers? Which someone else is going to talk more about that in a minute. To be eligible for hospice, a beneficiary has to be entitled to Part A. To be eligible for Medicare hospice, I mean, you can get it with your own funding if you have the funding, but the majority of people wind up getting it on Medicare. You have to be entitled to Part A of Medicare and be certified as having a terminal illness with a life expectancy of 6 months or less. It can be provided in all different settings, including home hospice, which has been growing, assisted living, nursing homes, and brief stays in the hospital when necessary. They're paid a daily rate for every day a beneficiary is in the care, regardless of whether you get services that day from the hospice. So there's an incentive to keep them longer and try to get the least demanding cases. Get people who are going to be around a long time and not require much work. So the diagnoses have varied over the years, with cancer always at the top, but others growing in prevalence, especially in for-profits. Other diagnoses include ill-defined conditions, whatever that is, failure to thrive, dementia, and other mental disorders, including Alzheimer's. As of 2010, the MedPAC, which is the Medicare Payment Advisory Commission, I should have put this in earlier, estimated that over half the Medicare-certified hospice providers in the U.S. were for-profit, a jump from 13% in 1992. At the same time, whatever their profit status, they were moving toward larger consolidations, cross-sector alliances, enabling higher levels of reimbursement in places such as assisted living. The Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act has had an impact as well. CMS is now required to collect data in order to reform the hospice payment system and to develop quality measures. That's an encouraging piece. The Office of the Inspector General have done a lot of different studies trying to understand what happens right now and what's going on with financial incentives. Very good studies coming out, you know, as recently as 2 months ago. CMS is currently implementing a new hospice experience of care survey in order to better understand their perspectives on the care. This is a survey after the person dies. They talk to their family caregivers about what happened here. All hospices receiving Medicare are now required to participate in that survey, and they're hoping to shape payment determinations beginning in fiscal 2017. This big fat report that came out recently about assisted living facilities reported that Medicare spending for hospice and assisted living facilities more than doubled between 2007 and 2012, 5 years. Hospice is providing care longer and raising much higher payments for beneficiaries in those settings, although they're actually less complex than, say, if they were in a nursing home. And meanwhile, they're also getting the assisted living care that they were already in there for. The Office of the Inspector General recommended the following: reform the payments to reduce the incentives for hospice to target people with certain diagnoses and keep them a long time. Target certain hospices for review. There have been some interesting court cases, which some of you may have seen, from some of these for-profits. Develop and adopt claims-based measures of quality. Make hospice data publicly available for beneficiaries and provide additional information to hospices. Ooh. Spelling error, to educate them about how they compare to their peers. CMS concurred with all of those and promised to incorporate them in their planning. So hopefully this will keep going and we'll see some improvements. So here's some questions just at the very end. Is it for-profit status which shapes these behaviors, or are all hospice programs seeking to gain maximum reimbursement and it just happens that some of them are for-profit, a growing percentage? Are beneficiaries, this is a really key ethical one, are beneficiaries receiving less than adequate care as these programs recruit patients based on the likelihood of receiving more payment with less expense? And are the Office of the Inspector General and the MedPAC findings likely to affect Congress's perspective on healthcare spending. I'm just trying to give you all nightmares to go home and worry with. So that's